Welcome to the Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast, a series exploring the rich, nuanced history of Grambling State University, the city of Grambling, and the people who make it. This series is a collaborative project between students and faculty of the History Department of Grambling State University, as well as faculty from the University of Arkansas. The Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history project, has been made possible in part
by a grant from the Albert LePage Center for History and the Public Interest at Villanova University. This season is part of their Cities and Historical Perspective thematic investigation and will focus on the economic, racial, and social history of the city of Grambling through conversations with former business owners and city officials.
Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this podcast do not necessarily represent those of
the LePage Center for History and the Public Interest, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the Social Science Research Council, the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities.
I have the opportunity today to interview a brother and sister team, descendants of A.D. Smith Insurance Company in Grambling. And I have Mr. Lonnie Smith and his sister, Cassandra Smith. So welcome, and I'm going to allow each of you an opportunity to introduce yourselves.
Well, my name is Lonnie Smith, and I appreciate the opportunity that Sister Days has presented for us to not only introduce ourselves, but share some of the historical aspects of Grambling through the work of our father, A.D. Smith Sr. We both were born and raised in Grambling. Daddy moved here in 1946. I was born in 51. My sister was born in 52. And we grew up through Grambling. We both finished Grambling High, and I eventually finished Grambling College. And my sister, she knows that I'm going to say this. She was a renegade. She finished from Southern. But we didn't throw her out of the family. So just glad to be here. I currently live in Birmingham, Alabama. My sister moved back to Grambling a number of years ago, and so she's still a resident of Grambling. And thankfully so, because every time I come home about 9 or 10 times. And we don't have to pay any hotel rent because she moved into the family home that we grew up in. Mm-hmm. So just glad to be here.
Mm-hmm. I'm Cassandra Smith, and I, like my brother, grew up here in Grambling. We've seen it go from small, dusty place to a place that now has streets, paved streets. I am so glad to be a product of Grambling. I didn't know how fortunate I was, my educational background, until I got out in the world. One thing I'd like to say is that I thought Grambling was the city, and we called Fellowship and Liberty Hill the country. When I got out and experienced life, I said, oh, we were the country as well. But Grambling is a unique place, and I am glad to be a product of it.
So what do you remember about the businesses in Grambling when you were growing up?
Well, I do know and remember that the businesses in Grambling were very cohesive as far as the community. The community catered to those businesses. Like, for example, Grambling used to have a supply market, Grambling Supply Market, a grocery market that was stock owned. Daddy owned some stock in there. Dean Cole owned stock, and other faculty members owned stock. And let me just say, this might be another question down the road, but the university and the community were so interwoven that you couldn't separate one from the other. It was just, Grambling was a college town by the most specific definition of the term college town, because the college was the town and the town was the college. But they were all intermingled together, and there were businesses like restaurants, like Mike's Cafe, which was one of the main ones that come to mind because that's the one that I frequented most when I was in high school, Don's Dairy Bar. They had
Penny's
Restaurant. They had laundromats. Coach Hobdy had a laundromat called Hobbs Laundromat. And then, of course, the Collegiate Shop, which was opened in 1955 across the street from where it appeared and that where it eventually closed just recently. But there were a number of businesses, and they were catered to. I mean, they were frequented by the community very much so. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons was because of segregation. It was segregated. Grambling was segregated. Well, the South was segregated at the time, but we were more cohesive, more together mm-hmm. units. So that's basically what I have to say mm-hmm. about that.
And we also had, it was called Esso Gas Station, mm-hmm. where Mr. Rollins owned and managed it. We had one good thing about growing, I didn't realize this was a good thing until I got older. Everyone, the adults and the students on campus, everyone wanted the best for everyone. If I did something that needed to be corrected, I was corrected by that person, the adult in there. And lo and behold, when I would get home, I'd think I had gotten over, here comes my mother with the switch, because we respected the adults. And even at school, if you got a whooping at school, you were going to get one at home, because the people, that's how we were. We were one big family. This is just a personal opinion of mine. I believe that integration in terms of education, undergrad education, hurt the community, hurt this community. Because when I was a student coming through the high school, if you failed third grade, you were going to stay in third grade until you either aged out or got the work. And I think I have one of the best educations that white people or black people was provided. I'm grateful to be a part of this.
How did Grambling, people in Grambling socialize? Where were the places, if you will, or were there any mm-hmm. at the time for people to socialize?
Well, because of the cohesiveness of the community and the college, most of the places to socialize were on campus. Like I remember on Wednesday nights, we used to have play night up in the high school gym for all of the community students, which was the same as all the elementary school students. And then they used to have street dances that the high school students would, even though they were designed for college students, but when we were in high school, we would frequent those. And then they had the bowling alley, and then all of the games, the football games, baseball games, and college games, we attended all of those as well. Basically, in a nutshell, most of our socializations were places in Grambling that were appeared on the campus. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, when Grambling was out of school for something, when Grambling College was out of school for something, Grambling, Louisiana was a ghost town,
yes.
so to speak. But that's basically the source of most of our socialization.
Also, the adults, quote, end quote, had these clubs. One of the oldest clubs, I think it was formed maybe in 1946. I'm not exactly sure of the date, but you had what was called the Couples Club. Mm-hmm. Even though I am not a couple, I have rotated to people who lost their husbands and became that person's couple. I was told that it was formed, the couple club was formed for adult purposes. People would get together and drink and talk and conversate, play cards or whatever. Another social club was my mom and dad's Bid Whist group. They would go from house to house to house. And you would think they were playing for money. But those were things that people knew was going on in Grambling. And those that weren't a part of it just weren't a part. They weren't getting left out. They just weren't a part of that.
Yeah. Grambling at the time was a dry parish. They didn't start, the state of Louisiana's constitution was changed in 1974. Prior to that, you had to vote the sale of liquor in, but with the 1974 constitution, you had to vote it out. So when they ratified the 1974 constitution, every parish was selling liquor until each parish on an individual basis was voted out. And in Lincoln Parish, all of the municipalities voted it out except Gremlin. And that's why Gremlin, during the CB times, the Citizens Band radio times, Gremlin was called the Whiskey City.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But as far as the Couples Club, you know, that was formed during the times when Gremlin was dry. And it was formed to accommodate many of the faculty couples so that they could go to Calhoun, to one of the adjoining parishes.
The tree.
The tree, right, right. And they would bring back so that they could socialize on their own. I mean, it was very wholesome. It wasn't any fighting or anything kind of like that. It was just a setting where they could enjoy themselves in Grambling or in around Grambling so that they wouldn't have to go elsewhere. And that's what, and it still goes on today. Mm-hmm. My sister, San, is a member of this couple club.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she's not a couple.
Right.
But she used to go with Mrs. Humphrey.
Richardson, yeah, first.
Ms. Richardson first, and then Mrs. Humphrey.
Ms. Humphreys.
It was Leroy Humphreys, you know, one of the former band directors' wives. But that still goes on today.
Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Richardson is the wife of?
Dr. Thomas Richardson.
Richardson. And
who used to be over the head of the art department. Mm-hmm.
He established the art department. He mm-hmm. did the curriculum. And as a matter of fact, I have some of his paintings or pictures that I plan to donate to the art department if they will have them.
I'm sure they would welcome them. And also he was, I was very proud of knowing that in our community we had a Tuskegee Airman.
Oh, right. Yes.
So that's right. To have known him. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to also ask you, Cassandra, about members of the Couple Club, because mm-hmm. I know you and I have talked about this previously, some of the notable members of the Couple Club mm-hmm. that you mentioned.
Lots have died. We haven't had a Couple Club event since 2019 when COVID hit. The what happens to how you get in there, except if you're me, is if it's 12 couples, and if somebody dies out or decides that they no longer want to be a participant. And usually that doesn't happen. What happens is death or aging out. The members of the Couple Club would write a name down and see who we might invite to join. And then letters would go out to people, and people would indicate, yay, I want to be a part, or nay.
Very selective group.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I unless you didn't want to, some of the members,
mm-hmm.
who they were, prominent members, mm-hmm, if you wanted mm-hmm. to mention any of those names, some of the people.
Well, Jim Washington, we do not have like any rules or regulations. Generally, we get together now to eat. And
some of the earlier members.
I think some, of,
some of the earlier members, mm-hmm. Forming members.
Right. I think some of the original members, like Coach Eddie Robinson and his wife, Coach Hobdy,
Mama Fi,
you know.
And Mama Fi is the daughter of the founder of Grambling, right, Charles
right.
P. Adams. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure our audience mm-hmm. is aware.
Right. Yeah. Her name is Fidelia O. Johnson. Mm-hmm. Who was
her sister?
Her sister, yeah. Mm-hmm. Teresa Garner.
I was going to say
yeah.
to it, but they went.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And so many.
Well, the Lords. Who, the Lord's. Oh, yeah. Mrs. Lord.
Mr. F.M. Lord and Mrs. Lord. And Mrs. Lord used to be the postmaster. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Lord taught industrial arts on campus. Mm-hmm.
Lila Davis and Red.
Yeah, Lila Davis and Red Davis, who used to be Lincoln High's principal.
And Ms. Davis happened to be my teacher in the fifth grade.
Oh, she was. Okay.
Yes,
she was.
Over at the lab school.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yet.
She did. Yeah, she
let
did.
Me say, this is kind of comical now. Lila Davis stopped me and Ola. We had gotten around the big building. Ola and I were, and still are best friends, but we were slipping off of the campus to go get a hamburger down at the student union. And we had made it around that the corner of the building, and who pulls up but Lila Davis? And she said, get in the car, and took us back. She said, I will be watching you two, you know. We didn't get put out of school, but sometimes I think if I had been somebody else or Ola had been somebody else, that's that selectivity. I'd have gotten put out.
And to mention the hamburgers at the Student Union, that used to be prior to the way it's set up now. Mm-hmm. We would walk from the high school after school and get, and if you had a dollar, you could get two for a dollar because they were 50 cents. But they had the best burgers in the Student Union back then, I have to say.
Right. Yeah.
They really, really did.
Yeah.
So now we're going to start to unwind about this business a little bit that your dad had. But first, before we get into that, what other occupation aside from the insurance company did he have, and how did that go?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, he came to Grambling in 1946. Now, I don't know whether this was a coincidence, but in 46, that was the year that Grambling had changed. Grambling College had changed its academic structure. They went to the establishment of divisions. And Grambling High was one of the divisions. You had a division of home economics that Mama Five was over. You had the division of physical education, education and athletics. That, you know, Coach Rob was over that. So when Grambling High was established as a division, they had their first principal. He was not a full-time principal. He was a part-time principal. And he happened to also serve as the registrar. Mr. Garner, I can't remember his first name, but he was
W.L. Garner. Those are his initials.
Yes.
Right. W.L. Garner, he was the acting, well, he was part-time principal of Grambling High and full-time
registrar.
Okay. Daddy came in 46. In 1948, they decided to have a full-time principal, and Daddy was selected to be the full-time principal. He was the first full-time principal of Grambling High, and he served at Grambling High from 48 to 57, after which he moved over to the campus and became a supervisor of student teachers and also taught educational courses. He taught test and measurements, which is now called, I believe, diagnosis and evaluation, teaching high school subjects, educational psychology, and things of that. And he loved that much more than he loved being a principal, because there's a lot of headaches involved in principalship. And he had served nine years as a principal. It was time for him to step down and let some younger blood handle it. But he worked on campus from 58 until 70 when he retired. During the course of his last years at Grambling, that's when he started his insurance agency. Let me just mention that he was an educator for 31 years, and he worked in the insurance agency for 31 years, but nine of those years overlapped.
Okay.
In 1961, he started on January 21st of 1961. That's when he opened up his insurance agency, and that happened to have been my 10th birthday. He worked there from 1961 until his passing in 1992, so that was also 31 years.
Many of you in the community probably remembers my sister, Jenny Faye Smith. And when my father's business first started in 1961, we were kids. But he would allow us to answer the phone. And he would pay us 75 cents an hour. And, you know, back then, 61, 75 cents was big. But that was the first job I ever had. And my father would pay what we made into Social Security, you know, benefits. Yeah. And so that was even now helpful in getting those 40 quarters.
In what other areas did your father serve or work in the community or the city, town, village, city of Grambling?
He was very instrumental in not only working but establishing the city government of Grambling. Grambling, as you probably know, was incorporated in 1953. Daddy came to Grambling in 46, as I mentioned, but prior to their incorporation, Daddy was on the committee to travel to a town called Mound Bayou, Mississippi. It was Daddy, Mr. B.T. Woodard, and Dean Cole. Those were the three that I remember, and probably maybe one or two more. But they were part of the committee. They traveled to Mound Bayou, Mississippi, which had already been established as an all-black incorporated town. I mean, they were really, and this was in maybe the early 50s, maybe 51, 52, when they went over there. Mound Bayou had their own hospital. They had doctors and lawyers that I know the hospital was still there back in as late as the 70s, but they went there to examine their form of government because and then came back and used that form of government to establish to incorporate Grambling in 1953, and Daddy became a councilman. A town councilman. At the time when it was established, it was a village because you had to have at least 1,000 people to become a town. So I can't remember the time that it became a town, but it was a town of Grambling. I think it had 3,000 and something in 1965 when Daddy first became a town councilman. You know, prior to that, he was involved in some of the financial aspects of handling the money of the town of Grambling, but he was a councilman for 20 years, from 1965 to 1985, and then in 1985, which was not by coincidence, there was another man named A.D. Smith, Jr. This time, Dr. A.D. Smith, my brother, that became a councilman from 1985 to 2005. So for 40 years, from 65 to 05. There was a man named A.D. Smith that was a councilman on the town of Grambling. And also, Daddy, prior to his stepping down, he was also mayor pro tem because Mr. Woodard was the very first mayor. Mm-hmm. And Daddy became mayor pro tem when Mr. Woodard got sick. And he was actually a de facto mayor for the last few years because of Mr. Woodard's illness. But he didn't want to, everybody tried to encourage him to run for mayor, but he didn't want to do it because he had his business. His business was just growing, and he wanted to put more effort on that because it was full-time at that time. And then A.D. Jr., before he died, he was mayor pro tem under Martha Andrews, who was Mr. Woodard's daughter. But
is there anything else that you would like to add with regard to your dad's relationship with Mr. Woodard? I know you gave us quite a bit he and your dad and Mr. Woodard, and I missed the other person, went down to Mound Bayou, Mississippi.
Yeah, Dean Cole.
Dean Cole.
Earl Lester Cole.
Right, that's the Earl Lester. So for those who may be familiar, the Earl Lester Cole Honors College was named after Dean Cole. Mm-hmm. That's still operational today on the campus.
Mm-hmm. Now, Daddy and Mr. Woodard, they were, ever since 1946 when Daddy first came here, they were just lifelong friends there after that. Mm-hmm. And, they had good respect for each other. They were members of the same lodge. And they were just, Mr. Woodard taught math on campus as well as he had, his family had a pressing, a dry cleaning company. But he and Daddy were, they were just lifelong friends since 1946. And they were just kind of like hand in hand. I think Mr. Woodard wanted him to become mayor too, but he understood that, Daddy was, he was more interested in growing his business. And he did it in the right way without I'll talk about that when you get to that next question. That question that really addresses that. Yeah.
And as you mentioned that, and I have interviewed Mrs. Andrus, but when you were talking about that, the one thing about the grant, I want to reiterate, when you were talking about all the different businesses and the tailoring shop, and the, he did have a pressing shop, and but our community was self-sustaining.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yes.
We don't find much of that today, but it's just amazing, and I'm glad that we're able to capture this information for those that may not know that we didn't have to go anywhere else for anything because we knew we had it to provide, and our forefathers saw the need to provide for us in our community.
Right. Mm-hmm. And to piggyback on something that Sam said earlier, it was because of segregation that we were so cohesive and together. And in that respect, integration really had a negative effect on Grambling because on the one hand, it opened up opportunities for blacks to go to different schools and to go shop everywhere, to eat different places. But on the other hand, it did away with that cohesiveness type thing. In the same way, analogously, that the access of automobiles for all the students, you know, kind of did away with their when we came through, very few students had cars, and so we all mingled down in the village, you know, walked down to the village and had street dances. You know, we were way more together. But I might be digressing a little bit too far. So
that's okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. You feel free. Yeah. Feel free. So now let's get down to this business. A.D. Smith Insurance, okay. Incorporated. Let me say. So how did the agency get started? You alluded to the fact that after when he dedicated himself to his business, he wanted to make sure that was a success. But how did he get started?
Okay. That was another group of people in Grambling. And I don't know whether you might know this, but Mr. McNeil, Wilberforce McNeil was one of them, that put up a sign in this building right across from where the post office was. You know, the old post office was down in the village right to the right of, to the left of Lewis Temple. And there was a sign. I remember that sign says, insurance business will start here soon. And also in that building, I'm just adding as a side note, that's where the town of Grambling was too. You know, right in the same building where Daddy's first place was. That fell through. For some reason, they weren't able to get it. And I'm thinking it's because they weren't able to be, they weren't able to get a sponsorship. And so after that fell through, Daddy said, "Let me try it," because he had three objectives in mind in establishing his building, his insurance business. Number one was to provide high quality insurance service. Second, to operate a successful business in a fundamentally sound way. And finally, to create additional job opportunities. I just read that, but it sounded good. And this came from an article from the old Grambling Herald, which was a community newspaper, Grambling community newspaper, and it was written exactly 1 year after he started. And you can get a copy of this. It was exactly 1 year. It was written in February of 1962, and remember he started the business in January of 1961. So that was The main problem that he had being able to start his business is to get sponsorship. He was applying for independent insurance agency. He had independent agent, which meant that he could represent more than one company. But he had to be sponsored by another existing independent agent. In North Louisiana, all of them were white. And so he had called two or three different people. When they found out that he was African-American, They gave excuses for not. And I remember him saying that there was one white guy came, asked him to, and the white guy was just, he was point blank with him. He said, "Look, AD, I can't do this because if I did this, my business would suffer tremendously. You know, people would start blackballing me because I'm sponsoring a black man." So he ultimately found a white independent agent in Shreveport. It was called the Tri-State Agency in Shreveport that agreed to sponsor him for his application to establish an insurance agent. So he had to take the test. He studied for the test, and the test was about 4 hours long or something. And it was essay, part essay, multiple. It was a comprehensive test. And he passed that on the first go, you know, not mm-hmm. surprisingly. Mm-hmm. And so he started it. Once he did that, he got a loan from one of the banks in Ruston, and he bought the necessary equipment, desks, and, you know, and file cabinets and all of that. And on January 21st, 1961, he opened up his business in that building right across the street from what was at the time the post office. Mm-hmm. And when he started it, he would open it up as part-time. Because, you know, I remember him mentioning that too many people start a business and they try to put everything in it at first. But he started it for the first time, 5 days a week it would be open only 2 hours a day, and then 3 hours on Saturday. You know, Dad was still teaching at that time, so he would work full time on Saturday. And during those 2 hours each day, you know, which was in the afternoon, people like my sister and my other sister would answer the phone. I even, you know, were working too. So we would, and I think Billy might have, my oldest brother, A.D. Jr., was off to school, or he was in school. But we helped him keep it open during those 2 hours. And he gradually, as the years went by, he gradually increased the hours to the point where in 1970, he started working there full time. And he had would hire college students that were in the business field to work there too. And so it started off 2 hours a day and then went to 3 and 4 hours a day. But he gradually, in 1970, it became a full time business. Mm-hmm. And he was there every day, 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. So that's how he started. And well, his first two main underwriters, his first two main companies were a company called Marquette Insurance out of New Orleans and the Stuyvesant Insurance Company out of New York. And that's in this article too. One of the main problems that he had, I think he had been in business about 5 years. He was still teaching on campus at the time. Marquette was his main company. Yeah, most of his customers were insured by Marquette. Marquette went bankrupt, and I don't remember the details of why they went bankrupt. So Daddy had to, on his own, and with some help from the college students that he had hired, reassign all of his customers from Marquette to a new company, which was, I think it was Fireman's Fund. With this new company, and rumor had gotten out that everybody knew that Marquette was bankrupt. Rumor had gotten out that Dad's insurance business had failed, but he was still in business, and it was a very hectic time for him, and he was really stressed. That's the most stressed time I ever known during the course of all while I knew him. But he did it, and he got it, and the business did not fail, and all of his customers, some of his customers left. Because of the rumors and all of that, but he still brought in most of his existing customers, and he added new customers, mm-hmm. and the rumors finally quelled and let them. He's not out of business. He's still mm-hmm. still in business. But that was a trying time.
One other thing, you know, we're talking about community, mm-hmm. the community or town of Gremlin rallied behind him. Mm-hmm. Our next door neighbor, L.D. Land, was his first customer. What happened is here's this Gremlin being self-supporting, mm-hmm. you know. That's how we live. Mm-hmm. If anyone had a problem in Gremlin, you know, people in the community would rally around him. My father was very he was an honorable guy, and he believed if your word was your word, then he's okay with it. But don't ever cross him, you know. This is a little anecdote. There was a guy that we grew up with, Sammy Jones. He would borrow $20 on Monday and pay Daddy $20 that his return, you know, that Friday. And it went like that. And I think my sister-in-law asked...
Mama asked him. It was Mama.
Yeah, why do you keep loaning him that $20? And Daddy said, because he keeps paying me.
Paying me back, yeah.
His word.
Yeah. And another thing I want to mention I had forgotten that Mr. Lamb was his first customer, but I want to add that his biggest customer was one of his college classmates, a man that they played college football together. And that biggest customer was Coach Eddie Robinson. He and Eddie Robinson had built this Stadium View Apartments. Mm-hmm. And he gave Daddy all of the insurance business for that Stadium View. One of the things that a lot of people don't know is that Coach Rob and Dad went to Leland together. They played in the same backfield together. Coach Rob was quarterback, and Daddy was – they used to call Daddy Tank, but I'm digressing. I know I'm digressing.
That's okay.
But Coach Rob, they weren't bosom buddies, but Coach Rob had that kind of respect for Daddy to give mm-hmm. that insurance business to him, and they were lifelong friends. You know, they didn't talk every day or everything, but they had ultimate respect for each other. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. And Coach Rob never did take the business away. I won't talk about that. Yeah.
We would presume during those socializations, that is where they discussed a lot of the business and the inner workings of keeping the community together and keeping the business together. I just wanted to. So did any, with regard to his insurance business, are you aware of anything? And I know probably back then, not as we see today with natural disasters that take place. Mm-hmm. And we know in Louisiana, there is a challenge with insurance because of the disaster, specifically hurricanes that have taken place. Do you know if there were any occurrences of that may have impacted? I know you just mentioned about one of his underwriters going out of business. Right. That could have potentially posed a problem, but he was able to navigate. Right, but any natural disasters?
I don't know of any natural disasters. Even Katrina, that was most mainly in the south, south area. I don't think that there were any natural disasters that adversely impacted his insurance. I recall in 1962 they had a big bad tornado that came through Jonesboro. And that was, he had been in business only a year, so maybe that's the only one that I remember, you know, from that span of time. And I don't think that was anything that adversely impacted. I do know that when he first started, about the first 6 or 7 years of existence of his business, the customers used to pay their premiums directly to Daddy. But then the underwriters came up with a system where they would pay directly to the insurance companies. They had a system called CBS, Customer Billing Service, or something that allowed them to pay directly, and that was a relief for your daddy, because they would, you know, we used to have to create the invoices and all of that kind of thing. But I know that doesn't have anything to do with natural disasters.
No. It's all about the business.
All about the business. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
what about any racial tensions? Do you know if he experienced any racial tensions, possibly from other insurers before?
No, that one in the 99.9% of his customers were all black.
Okay.
The first white customer that had that in the insurance business, there's a system called assigned risk, mm-hmm. where if you have an accident or found drunk driving, you had to have insurance if you're going to drive a car. And if you became a high risk like that, where you continue to have, not only did your insurance go up, but a lot of insurers didn't want to insure you. So to keep that from happening, the state government came up with a pool called assigned risk pool, and that was for all of those people that the insurance didn't want. They had to make them assign them to certain insurance companies. So Daddy's first wife's customer was one of those assigned risk customers, a guy named Youngblood. I don't remember his first name. I don't remember where he's from. But that weren't any racial tensions, because by the time 1970 rolled around, you know, the race relations were getting a little better. You know, we were able to go to, you know, eat in different places. But I don't think he ever had many white customers. And as far as existing white independent agents, I'm sure that they were telling a lot of the black companies that y'all don't want to go to him, because, you know, he's not reliable, blah blah blah. They didn't know that Daddy was one of the most honorable men. As a matter of fact, and his integrity was such that We never, none of his children ever heard him curse. Mm-hmm. Never heard him curse. You know, he's cursed before, but he never let us see it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're playing with Coach Rob in college, you know, I know he had a few damn it to hell. You know, but we never heard him, because that was the way that was the integrity. And as far as I know, this is another question, but if you don't mind me, there's a question of how he got along with other black insurance agencies, like Gray's Insurance. Well, Daddy was more well-established by the time Johnny Mac Gray started his insurance company, but that was no tension. If anything, he helped him establish it. As a matter of fact, Johnny Mac's daddy, Mr. Lars Gray, had started a gas station right across the street from the Catholic Center way back in the day. You might not remember that. But they were also deacons, the co-deacons together at Mount Zion. And Mr. Lars Gray said at Daddy's funeral, he spoke about him, and he said that when Mr. Gray started his company, his gas station, he sought Daddy for some advice on what he should look out for in establishing a business. And Daddy told him, he said, the main thing you got to do is count your pennies. Count your pennies. If you do a good enough job counting your pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves. And so that's the kind of respect that the Gray family had for Daddy. And it's the same kind of togetherness that they had. So he didn't have any problems with that.
How important was advertising? And you know why I'm asking that question.
How
important, and did, let's say, how did he feel about advertising for his company?
He was all for it. You know, as a matter of fact, he had a lot of different things. He had ashtrays advertising his company. He had trash bags that goes in the cars. He had match books, and he had the little things that you use, the bottle openers, can openers, jar openers,
I mentioned to you. I still have one of those that has A.D. Smith Insurance. I have matches that would, of course, my parents would have had, but I still have them. Those things mean a lot to me, historically speaking, especially with businesses that are no longer in operation. Mm-hmm. And I guess we see a lot of that today with advertising and different things. And it's just so unique when we've made it this far in time, and we can look back and see, even though starting out in a business that as he did, but to even want to invest in advertising is very important.
And
they were useful things, let me say.
Exactly.
He had advertisement on useful items and promotional items. I wanted to make sure I wanted to be sure I included that, because you don't find many, and a lot of times now with new businesses that open with people of color, they don't think about or don't have the funds, you know, to invest. But it goes a long way, I think.
Yeah, he was big on that, and he also looked at it as an expense that he could write off too. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as taxes and stuff. But he believed in advertising because, you know, you didn't have the internet back then or anything like that, and people, you know, they found those things useful. And so that was a win-win type situation.
So you've touched on, you all have both mentioned your role. You had a sister that also worked. Did all of you all play a part, or by this time, were you here? You were still in the area?
I was here until 68, so he had been in business about 7 years.
Okay.
And then I went off to school for 3 years before I came to myself and came back to Grambling and graduated.
During the summer months, I would work, and sometimes we would work a full day, you know, and it allowed us to get our own money to buy our own clothes.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't just making money and what you gonna do with it. We could buy our own clothes, but also Daddy told us about banking. Mm-hmm. And we had a Christmas account that was $25. Mm-hmm. Back then, you could buy a lot of gifts for $25. But saving and dealing knowing the value of money, that was a big thing for him. My father he had so much integrity, you know. And organized.
He had a plan for everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to mention this, but I had asked him about studying for the insurance test, the insurance manual. So when I was about fifth grade, I started, he gave me the manual to look at. That thing was hard. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't the dullest knife in the drawer. it was a lot of stuff for fifth grade. It was a lot of stuff for a grown person. As a matter of fact, when Jean, who also, you know, took over when after he died, when she first took the test, she failed it. And she was a business major mm-hmm. when she went to Grambling. A lot of people failed it for the first time. She eventually mm-hmm. passed it. But I was fifth grade, and the last time I tried to study was after my freshman year in college. I came home, and it was still hard. You know, I knew some things like identifying and all that, and some, you know, like the daily. But it wasn't, for one thing, I didn't have a business, the same kind of business acumen or the interest in business that Daddy had. I kind of felt like he might have wanted one of us to take mm-hmm. it over. You know, in fact, he started it on my 10th birthday. He kind of made me think he might have wanted to be me. But it wasn't me. It wasn't me, because not only was the thing, I just didn't have an interest in mm-hmm. it. And once he found out that none of us were interested in it, that's when he asked Gene to come to work for me. And it was at a good timely time mm-hmm. because A.D. Jr., her husband, my brother, had just gotten his master's from Southwest Louisiana, and he was getting ready to go to work on his doctorates at Ohio State. And so Gene mm-hmm. came up and started in 1977 and worked in it until 08.
Those early years, may have been 71, 72, my father went to LSU, I guess it's that 30 above.
In 62.
Mm-hmm. And he would be a full-time student at LSU mm-hmm. from that Monday to Friday. He would take off Friday, come home to run his business for those 3 hours, catch up. Mm-hmm. Then he would drive back to LSU. He did that for
6 months.
Yeah, six months. You know. So in terms of him wanting and knowing that he was going to succeed, mm-hmm. he also had a plan.
Yeah.
I need to do this.
And another thing from a financial perspective, during those early years, during his first year, as a matter of fact, our sister got really sick, mm-hmm. and she wound up passing. She passed on January 3rd of 62, mm-hmm. and that was during his first year of in business. And they had insurance, but it didn't cover everything. Mm-hmm. My sister died of hydrocephalus, mm-hmm. and that kind of put had a big impact on his financial situation, personal financial and business financial situation. Mm-hmm. But he survived all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he started his business right after he had sent my brother, A.D. Jr., went to Holy Rosier for 2 years, his last mm-hmm. 2 years of high school. And so that was a private school. So. Mm-hmm. But he was a good money manager. You know, mm-hmm. he navigated through all of that, and he counted his pennies and made it through.
So, did your mother have any role in the business, or what was her, I guess?
Not really.
Not really?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I think she may have worked down there a couple of times, but she was busy fishing.
You don't have to tell me. I admired her for that, because because I love fishing, and I always said that when I grew up, I wanted to be like her, to be able to have my own boat as a woman and go fishing myself.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So I remember. I remember her. And if you don't mention, and you can add, I remember she used to sell fish plates.
Yeah.
She had that truck, and I always wanted to get a fish plate. And I can even remember in Baptist Youth Encampment when it was mm-hmm. still held in Grambling. We didn't necessarily like the cafeteria food after the nighttime church services.
Oh, yeah,
she would be right up there. We could go to their truck. And, yes, indeed.
Right. And she sold bologna sandwiches.
Really?
Yes.
During the games, like they used to, she used to have a little stand. You know, a lot of people had those stands during the football games, mm-hmm. the home games. Mm-hmm. And they would sell stuff, especially when Grambling played Southern and Grambling. Mm-hmm. She was a hustler. She mm-hmm. sold Avon and you know and everything. And then she would sell fish so she can get her fish money. Get her fishing money. You know, but she was a hustler. But now she taught elementary school in Shreveport something when but this was before. They had moved to Grambling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then she wound up starting back teaching like in 1968, 69, mm-hmm. and she finished. She retired from teaching in 75. So she was getting a small retirement check.
Did she teach in Grambling?
No, she taught in
Shady Grove.
She started off in Shreveport for a while, and then she taught in Biamba Parish down in Shady Grove, and then she came up to Arcadia mm-hmm. Elementary School. Yeah.
Okay.
She retired from Arcadia in 75.
Mm-hmm. You touched on briefly how the business transition, kind of explain how the, I guess, the leadership transition from your dad.
To Gene. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In 77 was when Gene started. He had asked her to come up, you know, he started training her to be the office manager, so to speak. And at that time, he had two other workers, secretaries, Miss Duncan and Ruth Powell. Ruth Powell worked down there for almost, I think, 30 years.
She was the first.
She was the first
full
one.
Time.
Miss Gilmore.
Miss mm-hmm. Gilmore. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, and also she was in Daddy's last high school graduating class of 1957 at Grambling High.
Okay.
Ruth Gilmore and another one, kind of another idol of mine, Bobby Raven. He was also in that graduating class.
you didn't know
that. Okay.
Yeah. She had two other workers, so it was four of them working down there in 1977.
So he was doing real well to have that many employees. But keep going.
Yeah. He had turned the insurance over into a family corporation. It went from Smith Insurance Agency to A.D. Smith Insurance Incorporated. It was an LLC, I think. And we had
INC had, at that time.
Yeah, INC. Yeah. We had stocks. You know, he had created a family. It was a family corporation. Created 250 shares, and Daddy had 200 shares. He stopped paying himself. He would declare dividends every 3 months or so. So he stopped paying himself a monthly salary, but he would declare dividends. And with those 200 shares, you know, he would get his part from that. But of the other 50 shares, he gave Mama 10 shares. And gave, and then the other 40 shares, he split into five groups of eight. Eight shares for me and for his four kids, and Gene got eight shares. So that's how all of those shares came about. And, you know, when Daddy died, then we took his shares and split them up among us, and when Mama died. But I don't know whether that addresses the question specifically, but that's how the organization of the business changed over the years.
From his generation mm-hmm. on to
Gene.
Gene. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Before Gene took over, my father got sick. And Gene then had to really step in because he was sick enough not to ever come home from the hospital. So at that point.
That was 91.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
1991.
Mm-hmm. He died in 92, didn't he?
Right, but he got sick in 91.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So all the apprenticeship stuff that she was involved in came to fruition. You know, she was ready to step in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Daddy would still go down to the office, but she was handling a lot of the stuff that he used to handle. But anything that came up that warranted his attention, he was there. To do it, and I think that was maybe about the last 3 or 4 years.
He would go, but he wouldn't do but a few hours a day.
Right. And part of those few hours, he played cards, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. the solitaire. But he was there, you know. Mm-hmm. He had his hand on. He had his own office, and Gene had an office. That was when we were down in the building that Mr. Gallo had. Right there.
And Mr. Gallo built the side of the building that daddy's insurance office for daddy.
Specifically for him.
Mm-hmm. So that's another, a business owner?
Yeah, Mr.
Working with a business owner.
Business owner, yeah. Yeah.
In order to ensure that that's that cohesiveness.
Cohesiveness,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Within the community.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they were also aldermen, co-aldermen together.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. And I think A.D. Jr. had come over there by the time, not A.D. Jr. He had become an alderman by the time that Mr. Gallo was at. Was the mayor one time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they were, you know, that same cohesiveness, mm-hmm. the same togetherness, working together.
Right, to support one another. I want to thank you all again for coming to share your family story and to contribute to our podcast episodes, Lonnie Smith and Cassandra Smith, the children of the founder of A.D. Smith Insurance Company in Grambling, Louisiana. Thank you again.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast. A production of the students and faculty of the Grambling State University History Department, along with faculty at the University of Arkansas. Be sure to listen in to one of our other episodes, and if you have a voice you would like to share or have a nomination for a voice that needs to be heard, please contact the History Department of Grambling State University for more information.